Jaya Radha Humba Kunabi Hari.
Sa Paravidagacharya, all Siddhattha, Siddhashi Shimad, His Divine Grace of Ayachamana, Vakapananda, Gosan, Srila, Prabhupada, Kijai, Iskan, Founder Acharya, Srila Prabhupada, Kijai, Ananda Goti, Vaishnavrin, Kijai, Namacharya, Srila Huidas, Thakur, Kijai, Friends, say, Gohoshi Krishna, Chaitanya Prabhu, Nityananda, Shidwe, the Garadha, Shiva, Sari, Go, Bhaktivin, Shishi, Radha Krishna, Go, Pugabata, Sayam Kunda, Radha Kunda, Giri Govardhan, Kijai, Vrindavanam, Kijai, Maturidam, Kijai, Navadipdam, Kijai, Jagannathasami, Kijai, Yumanamai Gajai, Shimati Lasadevi Gajai, Sampeda Bhakta Vrinda Gajai, Gaur Premananda Hari Gaur. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Shri Guru and Gauranga Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Alright, ready from Srimad Bhagavatam, 8th Canto, Chapter 12, Text 37. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Aviklavam Avridam Alaksha Madhusudanaha Vajya Panama Prito Vibrat Swam Purushim Tanum. Tamma viklavama vriddham. Alaksha madhusudanaha. Vacha panama prito. Vibratsvam purushim tanum. Tamma viklavam avridam. Alaksha madhusudanaha. Vacha panama prito. Vibratsvam purushim tanum. Tamma viklavam avridam. Alaksha madhusudanaha. Vacha panama prito. Vibratsvam purushim tanum. All right. Tam. Him, Lord Shiva. Aviklavam. Without being agitated by the incident that had taken place. Avridam. Without being ashamed. Alaksha, seeing. Manusudanaha, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is known as Madhusudana, the killer of the demon Madhu. Uvacha, said. Parama Prikaha, being very pleased. Vibrat, assuming. Swam, his own. Purushim, original. Tanum, form. Translation. Seeing Lord Shiva unagitated and unashamed, Lord Vishnu Madhusudana was very pleased. Thus he resumed his original form and spoke as follows. You can repeat. Seeing Lord Shiva unagitated and unashamed, Lord Vishnu Madhusudana was very pleased. Thus he resumed his original form and spoke as follows. So purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Although Lord Shiva was aghast at the potency of Lord Vishnu, he did not feel ashamed. Rather, he was proud to be defeated by Lord Vishnu. Nothing is hidden from the Supreme Personality of Godhead, for He is in everyone's heart. Indeed, the Lord says in Bhagavad Gita, in the 15th chapter, text 15, Sarvasyacham ri sanavishto mapaksmatir jnanam apovanam cha. I am seated in everyone's heart, and from me come remembrance, knowledge, and forgetfulness. Whatever happened had taken place under the direction of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and therefore there was no cause to be sorry or ashamed. Although Lord Shiva is never defeated by anyone, when defeated by Lord Vishnu, he felt proud that he had such an exalted and powerful master. So, Kamaviklabvama Tong Alaksha Madhusudanaha Vachaparamha Prito Vibrat Swam Purushim Anum. Om Ganat Sivadanda Shah Gananjana Shlakaya Chatsura Meditam Gena Tasmai Yurabe Namaha. So, several topics here. The first one that comes to mind is that Lord Vishnu had assumed the form of the Mohini Murti incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And then it's described, he assumed his original form. Of course, the original form in this particular verse refers to the Vishnu form, not to the form of Krishna in the Goloka Vrindavan planet or the Vrindavan. So, from this we can understand that Dvaita Achyuta Nadira Nanta Rupa Madhyam Pradhana Purusham Kavi Yovanam Cha, that the Supreme Personality of Godhead has Ananta Rupam, different forms, but Ajopisam Aviatma Bhutanam Isharopisham Prakritim Swam Adushtaya Sambhavami Atramaya. But they're all the same person, and they're all manifest. There's not a change of bodies, like we have a change of bodies, that we manifest different forms. Last life we were cockroaches. This life we're human beings. Next life will be God knows what. So that's a change of body. Krishna doesn't change his body. He changes how people perceive the body. He manifests the body differently. His spiritual body, which is Satchidananda Vigraha, but it's not a change of bodies. Now, sometimes Krishna manifests an illusory form just to bewilder the atheists. It's like in the Moksha Leela. When Krishna left the planet, he left a form that was a replica consisting of the Panchamahabhuta, you know, the material energy, the material, gross material elements, to bewilder the atheists. That's just to bewilder the atheists. The devotees don't actually like to hear about this pastime of Krishna leaving the planet. And one devotee wrote me a letter the other day. He said, "We celebrate or commemorate the disappearance days of great Vaishnavas like Bhakti Sananta Saraswati Thakur, Divine Grace of the Prabhupada. So why don't we commemorate the disappearance day of Krishna?" I mean, it's an interesting question. I've never had that question before. Disappearance day. I mean, we hear about the pastimes, the disappearance of Lord Ram when he entered into the Sarayu River, and all the residents of Ayodhya went back to the spiritual world with Lord Ram. Well, these are pastimes the devotees don't like. The commentator, especially Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, says these pastimes the devotees don't want to hear about. Because when the earth becomes bereft of the personality of Godhead, then, of course, when Krishna left, then you have Kali enter. It's something that's unbearable. It's like, well, let me give you an example. It's like the pastime in the, what is that, the Lita Madhava, Lita Madhava. You have Radha and Krishna looking at pictures of their various pastimes on the wall of a cave. Some of you have heard of Lita Madhava? No. Anyway, it's a book by Srila Rupa Goswami. I've done a narration on it. So they're looking at various pictures. And, you know, some pictures Radharani gets embarrassed by, like the picture of Krishna stealing the clothes of the gopis. But there's one picture where Radharani and Krishna don't like. And that's the picture of that most cruel person who's called not cruel, Nimas Bakur. And he's taking Krishna out of Vrindavan, and the gopis are lying on the path, trying to block the way from the cart he's taking Krishna and Balaram out of Vrindavan. So that picture they didn't like. That's not a very desirable picture. So the devotee's love for Krishna is so intense that to hear about Krishna leaving Vrindavan or to hear about Ram leaving this world is just too intense for a devotee to talk about. Even sometimes, Amala. Mala means garland in Hindi. So even sometimes devotees don't like to hear about the pastimes of their own spiritual master leaving the planet. I remember for many years I didn't want to hear about Prabhupada's disappearance pastimes. But anyway, so devotees don't talk about the Moksha Leela, don't talk about these things. It's not something that you meditate on. And that's one reason why Prabhupada, there's so many stories when Prabhupada was visiting different homes where they had a cross in their home, and Jesus Christ was on the cross, and Prabhupada was crying, and he said, "This is horrible. Take it down." Because who wants to simply meditate upon Jesus Christ on the cross? It's just, someone loves someone. If you love the spiritual master, you love Krishna, you don't want to hear all the time about this and be reminded about it. You may be aware of it, but you don't want to hear about this. Anyway, so Krishna's body, careful, don't touch that. Krishna's body is completely spiritual, and he just manifests his body according to his will as an expert, dramatic performer. So that's one point here. Another point to me, which is really interesting, is how Lord Shiva was unagitated and unashamed, and Lord Vishnu was pleased. And this is very, esoteric in one sense, because it indicates to a certain degree, or indicates fully, the relationship between Lord Shiva and Lord Vishnu. And one of the rasas that's being exhibited in these different relationships in the story that was told yesterday by Drishtaprabhu is the indirect rasa of chivalry. Lord Vishnu and Lord Shiva are engaged sometimes in this fighting pastime or empowering demons, as Lord Shiva does to fight Lord Vishnu. And they're both enjoying this particular relationship because it's chivalrous. Chivalrous, of course, to give you a mundane example, is like when Sir Walter Raleigh put his cape down so that the Queen of England should cross. Anyway, that's part of chivalry. But part of chivalry is like the knights in Europe where they used to joust and have a good time, and then at night they would all eat together and enjoy life. I mean, the Kshatriyas had this sort of chivalrous mentality, and the Supreme Lord enjoys this chivalrous mentality along with his devotees. We find examples not only with Lord Shiva, but Krishna and Arjuna, for example. Some story how Krishna and Arjuna would wrestle with each other, and Krishna's wives would be witnessing it, and Arjuna would win sometimes. Of course, no one can defeat the Supreme Personality of Godhead by sheer force, but one can defeat the Supreme Personality of Godhead with one's devotion. I mean, just like Mother Yashoda. She was chasing after Krishna. And of course, originally she couldn't capture Krishna, she couldn't tie Krishna down. But ultimately, Krishna allowed her. Because of her devotion, she was able to tie up the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So Arjuna was able to defeat the Supreme Personality of Godhead in wrestling. And this, of course, there's many other stories about this. Arjuna, of course, I had another encounter with Lord Shiva where he was wrestling with Lord Shiva, and Lord Shiva won. That's when Arjuna was performing austerities in order to get different weapons and powers so the Pandavas could defeat the Kurus. And so Arjuna was performing austerities, a famous story, and this wild boar, who was a demon, started to attack Arjuna. Arjuna took out his bow and arrows, and he shot the boar. At the same time, this Karata, this hunter, shot the boar, and they started to have an argument, who shot the boar first, who does the boar belong to, and Arjuna was fighting with Lord Shiva, who happened to be the Karata. And eventually, Lord Shiva defeated him, and Arjuna realized it was Lord Shiva, and they enjoyed very much. This is a very enjoyable thing for the Lord and his devotees. They have such a such a sweet relationship, or relationships, that all these rasas, of course, generally the chivalrous rasas exhibited in relationship to Krishna's friends. So Lord Shiva is like a friend of Krishna, Arjuna is a friend of Krishna. So they much enjoy these different exchanges. And there's one story that I want to make reference to in the Krishna book, in the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, that sort of illustrates, you know, this enjoyable back and forth between Lord Shiva and Krishna. And this is a story that you didn't hear yesterday. So the story starts as follows. Once upon a time, there was this demon who thought he was God, or at least was trying to make believe he was God. His name was Pondraka. And the famous story. Pondraka is an interesting picture in a Krishna book, Prabhupada's Krishna book, where Pondraka actually has two extra arms tied on his back with the symbols of Lord Vishnu. And so he sends a challenging letter to Krishna, Dwarka, that you should give up the symbols of Vishnu because I'm the real God. You know, I'm paraphrasing. And so he challenges Krishna. Krishna comes to the battlefield. And also, Pondraka has a very nice friend named Kashi Raj, the king of Kashi. So Kashi, the reason this is related with Lord Shiva, Kashi is Lord Shiva's abode, or was Lord Shiva's abode, as the case might be. So anyway, he was the king of Kashi, and he's the friend of Pondraka. So Krishna comes and says to this Pondraka demon that if you want my symbols, okay, I'll give them to you. First, you got to catch the Sudarshan Chakra. So he throws the Sudarshan Chakra, of course, kills the demon. And basically, he kills the demon's friend, Kashi Raj, too. Kashi Raj means the king of Kashi. And in order to aggravate all these followers of Lord Shiva who reside in Kashi, and especially Kashi Raj's son, Sudakshina, he cuts off the head of Kashi Raj and throws it into Kashi. You know, just like that. Just like to aggravate everybody. And so Kashi Raj's wives, they just get really upset. You know, obviously, you see your husband's head just right there in the middle of the city is not exactly the most attractive or enthusing or encouraging thing to see. So they all get aggravated, but Sudakshina, the son of the king of Kashi, gets very, very angry. And he thinks, I'm going to kill my father's killer. Of course, that's Krishna. Nobody can kill Krishna. So he performs this austerity to propitiate Lord Shiva. And Lord Shiva eventually appears and he says to Lord Shiva, I want to kill the killer of my father. And so Lord Shiva says, all right, here is a nice sacrifice you can perform. He gives him something called tantra, a tantric sacrifice. The word tantra literally means to connect. It's not a bad word, but there's right-handed tantra and left-handed tantra. Right-handed tantra means the ceremonies or the procedures that we follow in bhakti yoga. We're also tantrics in that particular sense. That means, you know, we chant japa, we do fire sacrifices. This is all tantra. However, left-handed tantra is something different. Left-handed tantrics follow certain other procedures like eating meat and fish and engaging in obscene gestures and having illicit sex life. I mean, all sorts of interesting things that are there. I remember one time there was an article written for Back to Godhead many years ago describing how those who do this so-called tantric yoga are supposed to eat out of a human skull. You remember that article? It was an interesting article. And so, however, they get this, you know, tantric power. So anyway, so he began to perform all these different tantric rituals. And out of these rituals, there came a big, ferocious a demon named Dakshinagni, Agni. Yes. You know, and the demon was, you know, it's always described like the fire is coming out, his eyes were just like blazing fire or whatever. So he comes out and he says, "Yes, master, what do you want?" And so he says, "I want you to go to Dwarka and kill Krishna." Okay. So, Dakshinagni. That's interesting, Dakshinagni. Anyway, he's the fire of Dakshinagni. Anyway, the right hand of fire. So, he goes to Dwarka, and at the same time, Krishna's there, just nonchalantly playing chess and enjoying with all of his friends. So, Krishna's not worried about these things. And this demon starts to create some problems. They go to Krishna, and Krishna says, "All right, if you want, I'll take care of it." So Krishna takes out his Sudarshan disc, and the Sudarshan disc chases away. It becomes, just like we heard in the other story yesterday, Narayanastra is very cold. So the Sudarshan somehow or other, can manifest extreme cold. That's in Narayanastra. As well as, you know, anything, basically, any sort of weapon. So this demon becomes cold. And he runs away, goes back to Kashi. And the thing is, when you create demons, this should be a hint for those of you who want to create some sort of demon to hurt someone. If the demon is not able to accomplish his particular purpose, he comes back and kills the person who created him. So he killed Sudakshina, and everybody was upset then. But then the Sudarshan Chakra kept chasing this demon to kill him too. So the demon was killed by the Sudarshan Chakra. Then what happened is the Sudarshan Chakra burnt the whole city of Kashi down to ashes. And this was really upsetting for Lord Shiva. Because Lord Shiva, that's his main city. So then Lord Shiva appeared, some of the stories in the Bhagavatam, the 10th canto of Bhagavatam. So then Lord Shiva appeared before Vishnu, and he said, "Please, what am I going to do? You took my abode away." So then Lord Vishnu said, "All right, I'll give you another abode. And that abode we will call Gupta Kashi. And that abode is known as Bhuvaneshwara. Bhuvaneshwara is Gupta Kashi. And this Bhuvaneshwara, of course, that's the city where Lord Shiva is worshipped. But in that city, he has that benediction of always taking Mahaprasad from Lord Jagannath. Because Bhuvaneshwara is right near Jagannath Puri. So every day, the devotees, every day the devotees put the Mahaprasad from Lord Jagannath in a taxi and they bring it to Bhuvaneshwara. And then Lord Shiva, they offer that to Lord Shiva. So that's the proper way to worship demigods. Actually, one of the offenses against the holy name is to disrespect the demigods. I was listening to a memory of Srila Prabhupada's last night, and the devotee was describing how Prabhupada was going around he was in somewhere in Navadvip, and he saw a flat platform, a raised platform, so he got up on the platform as he was on the platform, and there was a deity of Durga. And what did Prabhupada do? He immediately offered dandavats to the deity of Durga. And then he began to recite that verse from the Brahma Samhita where Durga is the shadow of the spiritual energy, Chayeva Durga. So, you know, there's great respect for the demigods because the demigods are devotees, especially Durga, she's Vaishnavi, and Lord Shiva is the topmost devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vaishnavanam Yatha Shambhu. And of course there's another story in the Chaitanya Mangal about how Lord Shiva, when he got the Mahaprasadam from Narada Muni, of course Narada Muni got the Mahaprasadam from by serving Lakshmi, and that's a whole other story. When he got the Mahaprasadam from Narada Muni, just a little bit of Mahaprasadam, Lord Shiva started dancing so ecstatically that the universe was being threatened. And Durga, she had to stop Lord Shiva and said, "What are you doing?" And Lord Shiva said, "Because I got Mahaprasadam," and of course Durga wanted the Mahaprasadam, and Lord Shiva said, "You cannot have that Mahaprasadam because you're Maya or illusion," and she, by her austerities, had Lord Vishnu appear, and Lord Vishnu agreed to give Mahaprasadam out to all of us. So you see so many stories of this, like, chivalrous relationship between Lord Shiva and Durga and the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So one should not think, this is the point, one should not think that Lord Shiva was in Maya. He was in Yoga Maya, obviously, but not in Mahamaya. Lord Shiva was engaged in a exchange of ras with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is what's occurring here. And so when we see a pure devotee engaged in an exchange of ras, either fighting with the Lord, or even sometimes, like you see, when Lord Jesus Christ was on the cross, he said, "Forgive them, Lord." I mean, not forgive them, Lord. He said, why hast thou forsaken me? It's an exchange of ras. It's not that he has some lack of faith in the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Or when the gopis get angry with Krishna, they take out sticks. There's this famous story of the tax pastime that we tell when we go around Govardhan, that the gopis were stopped by Krishna. Of course, this is a story told by the acharyas. The gopis were stopped by Krishna when they were bringing milk products to Govindakund, and Krishna was going to tax them. And it was a very romantic type of taxing, because Krishna was going to tax them, or tax Radharani a certain amount for each beautiful part of her body. For your beautiful nose, for your eyes, there'll be so many gold coins. And they got very upset at Krishna, obviously. And there was a bargain made that they would return the next day to pay their taxes after they gave the milk products to the Brahmins at Govindakund. So what happened is they came back the next day, and basically with 100 times as many gopis as coward boys, overpowered the coward boys in Krishna, and tied them to trees and beat them with sticks. You know, so what's happening here? One can think of just these agitated women, you know. But these are loving exchanges. Mm-hmm. All these different things that we're reading about here, with Lord Shiva, you know, Krishna wrestling with Arjuna. These are all loving exchanges, either between Krishna and his devotee or between different devotees. So one shouldn't see these things with an ordinary materialistic eye. That's the point. So any questions or comments? Questions, comments? Yeah.
The verse states that there was no shame.
Yeah.
So the thought I had, or a comment, that seems to parallel the description of someone above the modes of material nature. in chapter 14, text 22 and 25, that they're not...
they aren't insane.
They're equipoised in the three masks. This concept of not being ashamed.
Oh, yeah.
Not pleasing the Supreme Lord. Even though he's gone through these, for a mundane person, he would have embarrassed himself.
Yeah.
To the extreme extent. Mm-hmm. That the result is that he's not at all ashamed. And that somehow pleases Krishna. So the thought that I have is that it parallels Krishna's description of a person who's risen above the three mercies.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. That's interesting. But I would say that he, what you're saying is true, but I would say he wasn't ashamed because he was giving pleasure to Krishna in doing that. And he was engaged in this loving exchange with Krishna. It's more than he just rose above the three modes. It's just that this was Krishna's pleasure. No.
Then he doesn't
have to rise above them, yeah. He's not affected by the modes of nature. He's in charge of the mode of ignorance, but he's not under ignorance. Or not in ignorance. Yes.
I'm just thinking about, I mean, I know that Lord Shiva, there's a path, but on the terms of, sometimes it's helpful for someone to have like a setback or a fall down.
Yeah.
And it's actually helpful to make progress, and it's good not to get really mired in shame and like that. And it's just kind of, Maybe you can't do that. Because sometimes people think, oh, everything's lost. You know, you lost yourself. You fell down. It's over. But oftentimes, falling down is very, it lets you know something about yourself. It helps you know where you're at.
Mm.
You
come
back with more strength and self-awareness and awareness of the sense of mind. And, you know.
Yes, that's true. That's true. I'm actually... Yeah, I mean, it's just like a child learning to walk. And sometimes the child, not sometimes, many times the child will actually fall down as they're learning to walk. But they get up with greater enthusiasm. Or someone who's being trained in some sporting activity. Obviously, they're not successful the first time or the second time or maybe the tenth time. So they take it as a challenge. But there has to, I think there has to be this sort of a Kshatriya mentality. You know, there's a challenge in Krishna consciousness. There has to be some, if one is in ignorance, they just stay there. So there has to be some sort of like, yes, this is my challenge, that I have this problem, I've realized it, it's made me humble, and now I'm taking this challenge. Yes.
Many years ago, I read a story, I don't know whether it was fictional or real, but it was about a monk in monk house, and he had sought sarity with a woman, which was impossible to find to escape, but somehow it happened. And after that incident, he became completely sane. And he needed that, he was done and over with, and he was able to
Yeah. Of course, the question with Lord Shiva, I just want to make it very clear. Lord Shiva, this was not a fall down for Lord Shiva. This was an exchange of ras with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And, like, even Arjuna, in the Bhagavad Gita, where apparently he's experiencing some material lamentation, it's not a fall down. This is Yogamaya enabling him to ask the questions, him to apparently be in illusion, so the Bhagavad Gita can be spoken. So these are all very rustic exchanges that we're talking about here. So we don't, you know, of course we can use regular examples, you know, someone falls down, someone does this, and they pick themselves up. Yeah, that's fine. But with Lord Shiva, we should understand this is a completely different category that we're talking about. Yeah.
In regard to fall downs, there is certainly an instance when Prabhupada was on the planet, when one devotee being properly situated as a sannyasi, and he had a problem, and Prabhupada said, just keep going. He said, just be Krishna conscious and find yourself in the proper situation. And he even chastised devotees for criticizing him because saying, that you made it worse, you can't even come back if you speak that way. So you should always see one's determination for your consciousness as the karma, you know, the definition of the person, not some irregularity.
In fact, according to Bhaktivinoda Thakur, one of the ways of committing offenses, not that we should follow the way, one of the ways that people commit offenses against Vaishnavas is accidental fall down. Criticizing an accidental fall down. Or criticizing one's past life. Or criticizing some present reaction that one is having from some past life. Let's say if one is ugly. That means bad karma. We shouldn't dwell on those things with Vaishnavas. If a Vaishnava has some accidental slip, we ignore that. That's an important point. That we don't criticize a Vaishnava for that. I mean, we've had devotees in ISKCON who have, you know, changed ashrams for one, you know, gone from sannyasin down. And Prabhupada said, just go on preaching. Just go on serving the mission. That's the main thing. We don't. And right now on the internet, there's so much criticism of Vaishnavas. Not for falling down, just for being Vaishnavas, basically. Just for preaching or taking some position or responsibility, you get criticized. We have to really avoid this. We should relish the association of Vaishnavas, see their good qualities, and praise their good qualities, and ignore whatever spot on the moon happens to be there. Okay. Confirmed by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. All glories to His divine grace, to the Prabhupada, to the Prabhupada, to the Prabhupada.